We're using a new technique today. Well, I mean a technique that you haven't used. It's not a new technique. But I wanted to explain that real quick. It's called spectrophotometry. And you can tell by looking at the word that it involves light. Spectrophotometry is a method to indirectly measure the concentration of a solution, which is useful information often in science. Now, it doesn't tell you what kind of solution you have. You have to already know what the solute is. You just don't know how much of it there is. You don't know what the concentration is. And if that's true, then you might be able to use spectrophotometry. I say might because there's certain other things that have to be true. But I say it's an indirect method. If you want to think about directly measuring the concentration, think about what that means. There's different ways of measuring concentration, right? But if we think about molarity, what is the definition of molar? What does it mean as a unit? Moles of what? Moles of what, though? No, it is a concentration. It's a measure of concentration, but it's moles of solute per liter of solution. And therefore, to directly measure that, you'd have to get in there and count the number of solute particles, right? And then divide by the number of liters that you have. Well, even if you could get in there and count individual solute particles, it would take you many lifetimes to count as high as a mole because it's such a huge number. So it's not possible to do it directly, really. You need an indirect way to do it. And spectrophotometry is one possibility. It is based on absorbance of photons. And this is why you need to know what kind of solution you have before you can even determine whether you can use a spectrophotometer. Because some particle types, solutes in other words, can absorb photons, some can't. It has to be with photons within the range of the instrument. For spectrophotometry to be a viable candidate for a technique to use, you have to be using a solute that is able to absorb photons in the range of the instrument. If you look at your spectrophotometer, which is in that little plastic box, you can go ahead and take it out. The spectrophotometer itself is really a lot smaller nowadays than they used to be. They used to be kind of typewriter size. Does anyone know what I mean by a typewriter? It's a little box now. But if you were to look at it under the hood, so to speak, on one end of the instrument you have a lamp that emits white light. Remember that white is a combination of all the colors, so it has photons of all wavelengths, light of all wavelengths. Okay? And then at the other end, and this would be a top view of the instrument, you have a square well. That's where you put your sample, but not directly. You put a tube containing your sample into that well. And not just any tube of your choice. You have to use a specific tube designed for the purpose, which fits right in there. And that tube is called a cuvette. The cuvettes for this instrument are plastic things. You have a cuvette rack. That's that whitish plastic thing sitting there. But it's probably empty. The cuvettes themselves are over here in this styrofoam box. Don't touch these with your bare hands because your fingerprints will block light and give you a wrong information. So put gloves on before you start using the cuvettes. All right? But I'm not going to pick one up because that would disobey what I just told you not to do. But you'll see that they are like a square cylinder, basically. well, a square cylinder will fit into a square well four different ways, right? So they will go in, but there's only one proper way to put it in directionally. So look on the cuvette for a little triangular shape and match that up to the instrument properly. Because if you put it in the wrong way, you'll get totally wrong readings. All right? But anyway, that's where your sample goes, which is a solution that you know the identity of the solute, you just don't know how much there is. At the far end, you have a collector plate where photons can strike, and if the photons reach this plate, that will produce a voltage, but that's converted into a numeric output. That's your reading, in other words. And it's the higher it is, I mean, the more photons that strike it, the higher the so-called transmittance would be. I'll talk about that in a second. But first, between the light and the well, you have a prism. So this white light hits the prism, and what happens when that happens? What happens to the light? It what? Well, yes, it is lit up, but I mean, what happens when white light enters a prism? Like on the dark side of the moon cover? It refracts, which is bending. Light rays bend when they encounter a prism, but how much they bend depends on the wavelength or the color of the light. So you have a mixture coming in, and that white light is going to turn into the rainbow colors, right? Each is going to go its own direction because they're bent at different angles. Well, when you adjust the instrument, in the old days with the knob, you would actually be turning this so that you could choose just which color is the only color that goes straight on and reaches the well. The others would be glanced off to the side. In other words, this is the way that you choose a wavelength. That's important for spectrophotometry because you have to set up the instrument to deliver light of a specific wavelength, specifically the wavelength that that particular kind of solute that you're interested in finding absorbs best at. Remember, we looked at the absorption spectra for photosynthesis. Each pigment has a peak at a certain wavelength that it absorbs that kind of light better than anything else. So to get the most sensitive readings, you want to set up the instrument for that particular wavelength. Well, anyway, once that's set up, this is why you have to know what kind of solute you're working with. Once you have that set up, you then need to zero the instrument. The output of a spectrophotometer is not an absolute measurement. An absolute measurement stands on its own. It's always a relative measurement, which means it's a measurement compared to some other measurement, a standard measurement. And you have to set that up by zeroing the instrument. You do that by setting up a cuvette with all of the ingredients that the solutions you're going to test for, or measure, have in them, except no solute of interest at all. Okay, so whatever the solvent is, whatever the other ingredients are, you have all that in your blank, just no solute. And then you put that in the well. By the way, when you put it in the well, push it down, make sure it's bottomed out, because if you don't push it all the way in, the light will just go under the cuvette. Anyway, with that blank in there, it's called a blank, when the one that you zero with, that has no solute, but it's just like all the other solutions. And you've set it up with the proper light. The light will go through this blank tube, right? Now, it's never going to be the case that 100% of the photons in this beam of light go through and reach the screen. Maybe the cuvette itself will reflect some or absorb some. But some amount of light is going to pass through, right? since this blank doesn't have any of the solute you're interested in, because you set it up that way, however much light does strike this, does go through, in other words, you tell the instrument to say, to pretend that that is 100% of the light. In other words, 100% transmittance, which corresponds to zero absorbance. Right? How much gets through is transmittance. That's not what really what you're interested in. You're interested in how much is absorbed. Absorbance. Well, when you zero the instrument, you're telling it this much light coming through is 100% transmittance and therefore zero absorbance. And that's what all your other measurements are based on. That's why it's a relative measurement. So that zeroing part is important to make meaningful measurements for all your other samples. Once you get the zero done, it only takes a couple minutes to get all of your readings, but you have to set it up properly. All right? Now, when you do put a sample in and you just don't have any idea how much solute is in there, if any, if it tells you there is a zero absorbance compared to your blank, that means that sample also doesn't have any solute in it. It would be a zero concentration. But if it is some positive amount of solute that's in there, it will absorb some of the photons, and therefore less light will reach the screen, less will be transmitted, which means more is absorbed. And the instrument will give you a positive value for absorbance, greater than zero. The greater the absorbance level or value, the greater the concentration. So there's a correspondence between absorbance and concentration of the solution, which is why this is an indirect measurement. Does that all make sense? That's just basically how to use the instrument and why it works. As for the science, meaning what you're really investigating today, that is enzyme activity. You're interested in assessing how well an enzyme does its job of working as a catalyst under different conditions. Okay, different temperatures for, if you're doing the temperature one, different amounts of lactose present for the other. Well, notice that there is this story about this plant enzyme, blah, blah, blah. That is a totally made-up story, which is fine, but I'm just going to tell you the truth of the matter. And you can pretend that the story is true if you want, but this is what really is happening. The enzyme that is called plant enzyme in this story is lactase. Obviously, that's an enzyme, right? ASE. Well, this is one of those enzymes that get their name because of because of the substrate that they operate on. So the normal substrate of lactase, the enzyme, is lactose. What sort of thing is lactose? It's what? Well, it's not. Milk is more than just lactose. Milk contains lactose. Yes, it's milk sugar is what it literally means. Lactation is production of milk, right? Lactose is sugar that's found in milk. But chemically speaking, what kind of sugar is it? In terms of size. Fructose is a different sugar. And speaking of fructose, what is its size? What word would you describe fructose as in terms of how big it is? It's a monosaccharide. Fructose is. What about lactose, though? No? Disaccharide, yes. Just like sucrose is, right? Sucrose is made of two monosaccharides hooked together. Well, so is lactose. It's just not the same two monosaccharides as in sucrose. So lactose consists of glucose, which is one monosaccharide, and galactose, the other monosaccharide. Those exist as monosaccharides if they're just by themselves, right? If they're joined together with a glycosidic linkage, then you have a disaccharide called lactose. That's reversible, as you know, right? So you can break down lactose into glucose and galactose. Hydrolysis, right? Well, that hydrolysis reaction that breaks lactose down into glucose and galactose is exactly what lactase's job is. That's why it's called lactase, because it operates on lactose. And so the hydrolysis reaction that splits it into the two monosaccharides is what lactase, the enzyme, multiplies or up. Not multiplies. What am I looking at? What am I looking for here? What word? Speeds up, but there's a different word I wanted to use. Yes, but that doesn't matter. It speeds it up. That's the normal substrate for lactase. Lactose is the normal substrate for lactase. Okay, now you want to assess how well lactase is working under these different conditions you're testing. When you think about what an enzyme does in general, which is to speed up a reaction, accelerate. That's what I was trying to think of. An enzyme in general speeds up a reaction, right? So if you want to assess how well an enzyme is working, you really want, that's another way of saying, how well is the reaction occurring? How quickly is the reaction occurring? Okay? So in this case, assessing lactase would mean how quickly is the reaction occurring that splits lactose into glucose and galactose. Now you could, if you're going to use a spectrophotometer to answer that question, which you are, by detecting solutes, right? You have three solutes here, lactose, glucose, and galactose. And so you could approach this question of how well it's working either of two ways. Three ways, really, but two principal ways. You could try to detect the appearance of product, because at first you don't have any product, right? It's just lactose. But if the enzyme is working, you're going to get more and more glucose and galactose produced. So you could try to detect the appearance of product. You understand what I'm saying there? And you have two products to choose from. You could detect the appearance of glucose, or you could detect the appearance of galactose. Because each lactose that's split is going to produce one of each. Doesn't matter which product you try to detect. But you could also approach it by determining how quickly lactose, the substrate, the reactant in other words, disappears. Because as the reaction proceeds, you should get less and less lactose present, right? If the enzyme is working. So you could do it either way, disappearance of substrate or appearance of product. And you have really three choices because there's two products. Here's where the problem is. To use a spectrophotometer, like I said earlier, you have to be working with a solute that can absorb photons in the range of the instrument. And none of these three solutes absorbs photons in the usable range. In other words, they're invisible to the instrument, all three of them. So you can't use a spectrophotometer for this reaction. And that's why you're not. Otherwise, you would just do it directly. Instead of using lactose, which is the normal substrate for lactase, you're going to use a surrogate or replacement substrate. Not lactose, but a substrate that's called ONPG. That obviously is an acronym. It stands for ortho-nitrophenyl beta-D galactopyranoside. But I'm not even going to write that out because you don't have to remember that. Just call it ONPG. It also is a substrate for lactase. meaning that in addition to lactose, which of course fits nicely in the active site of lactase, ONPG also fits in that active site. And just like lactose, which is a two-part thing, right? It's made of two monosaccharides that can be split apart. ONPG is also a two-part thing. If you split ONPG into its two main parts, one of them is galactose, and the other is O-nitrophenol. Okay. So not only does ONPG fit into the active site of lactase, which is why it's a substrate also, but just like lactase gets split, ONPG will get split. In other words, it's not just fitting into the active site, it is a substrate and will get turned into product. Specifically, these two products. So since you can't detect any of these three things in the normal reaction that it catalyzes, hopefully you can use a spectrophotometer to detect one of these three. Well, ONPG is also invisible, so you can't use that. I already told you that galactose is invisible, so you can't use that. O-nitrophenol, though, is detectable with this instrument. O-nitrophenol, as a solute by itself, makes the solution yellowish. And you can see that even with your naked eye, if there's enough present, it will look yellowish to you. And the yellower, the higher the concentration. Well, that's what a spectrophotometer is doing. It's giving you a quantitative measurement, meaning a measurement of an actual number, not just saying, oh, it's really yellow. It'll give you a number. And it's able to detect yellowness that your eyes can't even detect. But this is why we're using ONPG, because at least we have something we can detect now, O-nitrophenol. And therefore, really what you're doing is measuring how well lactase works in the different conditions by converting ONPG into galactose and O-nitrophenol by detecting O-nitrophenol. Does all of that make sense? Therefore, all you really need to do, having set everything up, is to properly zero your spectrophotometer following the instructions on the laminated card and get measurements for absorbance. Write those down in the appropriate absorbance column in your tables. And then from that, those absorbance values, which are your raw data, you can follow the instructions for how to calculate the number of micromoles of O-nitrophenol produced in 30 minutes and then in 1 minute. And that final column, the number of micromoles of O-nitrophenol produced per minute, which is what you calculate eventually, that is what you're using to test how well the enzyme works, because you're graphing that as a Y value versus the X value, which always should be your independent variable, right? So if you're doing the lactose one, it would be versus lactose. If you're doing the temperature one, it would be versus temperature. Does that make sense? Okay, I think that's all I wanted to say. There's almost always something I remember right after I turn the recorder off, but I think that's it. So go ahead and if my speech made you go over 30 minutes, that's okay. But if you still have some waiting to do for 30 minutes, then go ahead and wait.